WNST, Towson Baltimore. At Baltimore Positive, we are positively into the crab cake season. Going to be doing the Maryland Crab Cake Tour on Thursday over at Spirits West on Wilkins Avenue. Going to be joined by my pal Chad Weasley. We're going to be talking about running back contracts in the NFL. I think Chris Pika might be stopping by as well. It's all brought to you by the Maryland Lottery in conjunction with our friends at Window Nation, 866-90-NATION. If you need some new windows, you buy two, you get two free, and 2 years of 0% financing. Baseball on our tongues. You know, there have been a lot of conversations I've had with baseball people over 31 years of doing radio, 10 years, the last 9.5 years really of doing this solo around here. And there have been times when it's just gone by the wayside with baseball, where for years they were just so bad. I didn't want to bother Neil Solons down in Tampa or any of my buddies, even in the division, to come on here and talk about being 25 games under 500 in June. This year, however, it is exciting, it is exhilarating, and even though it's a road trip, and it's a road trip to Florida, I'm not on, we welcome Neil Solons back on. You know, your team's always been relevant somehow, some way. We've always knocked on the door wondering how we can be the Tampa Rays, and lo and behold, here we are. We got like a real thing going on between these two teams right now. It's exciting.
It is, and it's a really good Baltimore club. You know, I think when I looked at the preseason prognostications nationally, I don't think that enough people probably gave Baltimore credit for being the talented team that they are. I think it was almost as if was last year legit or not. And I kind of felt it was. And especially when I started to see some of their bullpen arms in spring training and how they bounced back from last year, I thought, okay, this group is legit. And I also thought a full year of Adley Rutschman was going to have a really good impact on their team, because I saw how good they were once he came up last year. He's a difference maker. He's their core guy, and they've got a lot of other core guys around him that are really good.
Well, you know about core guys there and farming them in and expectations, and not every prospect makes it. But this has been a unique thing here that the Orioles have been so bad. You know, they're bragging about how many 1-1s they had. And I'm thinking, whoa, that's 162 bad to get one player, like literally. And they built this thing. They said they were going to build it this way. And I think one of the reasons maybe in the offseason they weren't given as much love is that they didn't go splashing, signing, pitching, doing the things that look like they needed to do to fortify. Looks like they still might need to do some of these things to fortify to get past you guys in a short series and two or three other teams to try to win a championship around here. And it's kind of heady that we're talking about it in those terms. But I think that this class has come together at the same time at the right time. Then they need to get Mountcastle back, need to get Mullins back out on the field as well. But by and large, the way this thing has been built, yeah, it's optimistic to say these guys were going to turn out. But you know, people are pretty bullish on Adley Rutschman being a pretty good ball player, and even Henderson and Kowser's coming. These were all, you know, pretty solid prospects that were taken pretty high in the draft. Heston Kerstad being another one, and Jackson Holliday, another one in line for all of this awfulness, that there is this sort of rainbow of sunshine here in this particular period of time to say we're playing ball the way the Rays have built this now for literally a generation, going back to Madden and going back to when the guys originally showed up almost 20 years ago.
You know, a lot of people probably said the same thing about the Rays, you know, after 08, when they went from worst to first and had that great year and went to the World Series. Are they going to be able to staying power? And in some ways I still kind of heard it after last year. I mean, the Rays made the playoffs for the fourth straight season, won 86 games, and everyone said, go out and get a left-handed power hitter. Go out and get a left-handed power hitter. This team needs a left-handed power hitter. And you know, whatever happened in the free agent market happened, and it didn't work out, and the young players all took shape. You know, Luke Raley took a major step forward. Josh Lowe took a major step forward. And that gave all of a sudden the Rays some left-handed power to balance their right-handed bats. And, you know, I think you have to do it differently. You can't do it the same as New York or Boston or even Toronto in this division. I think Baltimore is almost a nice combination of what the Rays have done and what Houston did, where they had a really tough stretch for a while. They got a lot of really high picks, and they've hit on a lot of them. I mean, you know, you're never going to be perfect in the draft, just like you're never going to be perfect in trades, but they've hit on a lot of them, and they've made some trades that have really worked out too. I mean, you look at trading Jorge Lopez when they did, and then here Yennier Cano was, you know, kind of one of the pieces that probably no one recognized in that deal. And then this year, Cano is probably one of the filthiest relievers in the game. So, you know, you have to make smart moves, and you have to combine it with drafting, and you have to have a good culture and clubhouse and It seems to me both teams have that. And I think, you know, both teams have some staying power for sure.
Neil Solons is a part of the Rays broadcast team. Has been a multiple victim here at WNST over the years, but never a conversation we're talking about battling for first place in June, heady double digits above 500, playing good ball, great young players, all-stars around the corner. But I would say for your organization in not making moves in the offseason of consequence or of money, that's sort of expected by your fan base has come to expect that and expect that you're going to do it differently. I would think the expectation is the same, though, for players in the organization to say, I'm going to get a chance here. If I do things the right way, they're going to bring me up and I'm going to get a chance to go get my Carl Crawford money or pick any guy you want. That's an old reference there. But you're going to get a chance to go play baseball in the organization because they're going to make room for you if your talent shines. And that's what I think about for the Rays bringing all a generation now of players through, is that there's something about being a minor league player there that instills some good skills to get better at baseball. I mean, it's a great franchise in that way that hasn't been as supported as maybe it could be in Tampa. But I think around the sport, people have looked at the situation in Tampa and say it's still the shining star. Even when you didn't go get a lefty in the bat, you didn't do these things. You start out like the 84 Tigers. It's been an incredible start for you guys.
It's been amazing. And it's been a great group. And, you know, they have done, you know, to be where they've been, to be at a high of 29 games above 500 at one point this year. I mean, that's, you know, I think
it's insane, dude. It's June 15th.
I mean, it's amazing. So, and I think that one thing that they probably did a little different, it probably wasn't necessarily 100% by design, but they ended up extending a fair amount of guys. You know, Yandy Diaz was extended for 3 years. Pete Fairbanks out of the bullpen was extended, and they already extended Wander Franco and then gave Tyler Glasnow an extension. And they've got 8 or 9 guys that are extended 2 or 3 years out. And
guys like playing there, right? Even though the dome and this and that. I mean, it feels like there's less pressure. It feels like it's more fun than it is when you show up at Yankee Stadium and it feels more like, oh, this is business.
It's a great culture. And it starts with, you know, ownership. It starts with Eric Neander and Kevin Cash and the coaching staff and, you know, a constant buy-in by the players to do what's needed to win. You know, I think by and large, the last several years going into this year, they've had among the highest winning percentages in minor league baseball too. So the players that come through the system have an expectation of this is how we do things. You know, this is how you play to win. And then you see that carry over when they get to the big leagues. There's always going to be a transition period, but, you know, watching guys like Taylor Walls play defensively and watching Josh Lowe and watching Luke Raley and, you know, Wander and Isak Paredes and so many guys who they've either acquired via trade or they signed and developed themselves. I think when they come to the big leagues, they expect to kind of fit in the puzzle. And then when they do go out and sign a free agent like Zach Eflin, who has been outstanding in his first year, you know, I think there's an expectation that the guys that they sign are going to be great fits in the clubhouse. They're going to, not only that, but they have the ability to be really, really good and fit in. And I think Zach's an example from day one. You can go back a few years. You know, Charlie Morton was a great fit here. Rich Hill was a really good fit here. Corey Kluber was a good fit last year. All of those guys kind of, they find guys who are really good character guys that make sense with the group. And I think that they've got a really high level of ability to bring in good players, but also good character guys who they know would fit their system from a cultural standpoint.
You know, I've been down to Port Charlotte one time, and I think I've told you this story in the past, but my mother-in-law lives relatively close. I remember being down there and going to practice, and Rick Vaughn was still with the Rays then, and Rick's going to be coming on the program a little later on this week talking about Oriole magic and all sorts of things, maybe even some old Washington football stuff before a Wild Thing stuff I'll get him going on. But I visited your facility one time, and it was like super early February, pre-workout, pre-pitchers and catchers kind of thing, and it was was literally opening day. And the first day Kevin Cash took a job, the first day Joe Maddon's gone, and they're trying to figure out what's happening there. And I remember guys taking BP, and they signed a couple of veteran guys that year. But I remember Vaughn saying, hey, my manager's going to have his first ever press conference today. And I'm like, all these years later, he's still there. And when I saw his name, he was a very hot prospect as a manager, as is Brandon Hyde here, who has survived a lot of bad to get to the good. Most of those kind of managers, the transitional managers, 2, 3, 4 years of 90, 100, 110, 115 losses, you get jettisoned. The new age of baseball and the way the game's played, and when I think about the difference between hiring a Kevin Cash in that moment or Buck Showalter, who I think was still the Orioles manager at that time, and the way they think about the game and the way analytics have been baked into the game and now baked into what's happening here, Cash is his own success story, right? Like, they bet on the next Joe Maddon, and that's really hard to do. I mean, the Ravens did it here, going from Billick to Harbaugh and not making a transition on the football side. But on the baseball side, for a manager to survive that, I mean, your franchise only really had two managers this century, right? Like, kind of, sort of.
They did rebuild on the fly almost, too. And they did it without, you know, let's say in Baltimore, you had the 110, you know, the 100-plus loss seasons. And here it was, I think there was one 90 defeat season, and that was it. And everything else was in the 70s and 80s. And he was able to kind of rebuild, you know, and get back as they continue to draft and develop and bring in some guys. Because I think the hard thing is, from 08 to 13, they made the playoffs 4 out of 6 years, won 90 games, 5 out of 6. So they're picking at the bottom end of the draft every one of those years. And I think they only picked in the top 10 once in that 14 to 18 period, which is really hard to still do and develop a group that can win. And he managed to do it in an amazing way. And I think, you know, you saw him evolve year by year. I knew Kevin when he was in the minor leagues as a player. And I could always tell he had a great understanding of the game and was going to be, if he wanted to, a good manager someday. You know, we look at all the catchers across the game, and so many of them seem to make good managers because they see the game in front of them. But I think what Kevin does is he's extremely self-deprecating. He makes it about the players. He's a terrific communicator, great understanding of the game itself. And I think he understands that the analytics are important, but the people are important too. And I think he's good at both of those in a really great way. And he worries about the now. You know, last year, the Rays, even though they made the playoffs, I thought it was, and were one of the last teams in, I thought it was his best year managing, because we were in the top three in guys lost to the injured list. And the teams that also were in that category were well under 500. And he was undeterred and got his group to continue to believe. And I think that's one of the things that really stands out, is his guys really believe every day they have a good chance to win.
Neil Solon does all things Rays baseball. He's having a very good season. We're in a pretty decent season around here. Luke will be down at the ballpark all weekend for Seattle. Meantime, the Birds in Tampa. You guys have spent some time out on the West Coast. I guess one of the strangest things about this year has been that we're in Chicago, you're in San Diego. We're headed to some far-flung National League place and doing two weird West Coast swings in August and into September. The schedule's not loaded the way it once was, which really theoretically should really help your franchise and our franchise in that not seeing Toronto, Boston, and New York get all loaded up. How much has that played into this? And it certainly was done not just with a thought that, well, everybody will get to see Shohei Ohtani play every 2 years, mm-hmm. even if he winds up being a Yankee or whatever, that there would be a better chance to have better baseball, to have a fairer game across the board. It certainly has felt a little unfair toward the Rays at various points of your 29 games over 500.
I think it's helped every team in this division. To be frank, I mean, you've got what, 5 teams in the division that are all above 500 as we chat.
I said, if they keep beating everybody else up, they may unbalance the schedule back, so we beat each other up all over again.
I think you look at the Central, and they're having a tough time in the American League keeping a team above 500. And the National League Central, they also have teams that are barely above the 500 mark that are winning those divisions. And it's the East and the West divisions, which clearly are stronger. So I think, you know, the division will come down to how well you do probably outside the division. You know, I think or if one team gets a huge advantage head to head, that's going to mean a whole lot.
You can only make so much hay when you're only playing a dozen games, right? I mean,
when you're playing 13 games against one another versus 19, or 76 games in division versus 52, that's 24 games against teams that are, it's not to knock the other teams outside the American League East, but I still think it's the best division, not only in baseball, I think it's the best division in sports, you know, in terms of the balance and the strength of all the teams right now.
Now that the Orioles have picked themselves up and the Blue Jays have started spending money, right? Like this is as good as it gets competition wise.
There's no question in my mind. And I think all five teams are really well run in terms of their baseball operations. I mean, they have really smart people at the top. I think they've got really talented players throughout. You know, you look, whether you're looking at Guerrero and Bichette, or you're looking at, you know, the Yankees and when Judge is healthy and some of the pieces that they have there, to the Red Sox with Devers as their centerpiece. I mean, there's top 25 players throughout this division like no other. You know, you can't say that with five teams in any other division right now in any sport.
One thing we have lamented, you and I, forever is your fan base never really sort of showing up, our fan base being gone for a generation and chased off by a poor ownership, as well as love of the Ravens. And you guys have had to compete with a juggernaut of a hockey franchise down in Tampa. No one would understand. And then Tom Brady jets in for a minute or two in a couple of Super Bowls. So, I mean, there's been all of that, but baseball has been slow to change anything ever to make things better. I mean, this Oakland situation getting kicked down the curb to Vegas. I mean, but this year, I guess Theo Epstein got a hold of them and they figured this thing out, but the pace of play, the time of the games, I'm not a huge fan of the pickoff thing, but it has made speed, and my last name's Aparicio, a lot more important. The 10th inning thing, I'm not in love with it. I hate the college football thing too, you know, where they're playing scrimmage football. But the games are getting over. They're not crushing pitchers. They're not crushing bullpens. Bullpens are getting used so much anyway because that's the nature of the game. They've made the game better very, very quickly at a time when our fans here that were gone away, I mean, just gone. Like, I sat here, and I've done sports radio for 31 years here. Trust me when I tell you, the last 3 years, it hasn't been worth calling you and even talking about your team coming in because there hasn't been enough interest here. And now everybody's coming back to it because they're good and they got good quick in April. And then you start watching the games. They're starting at 6:30. They're over at 9:15. Yeah, I always said, my dad and I took the bus out there. We were kids. We get home at a decent hour. They have done a lot of things globally across the sport to try to make it better. And yet they still play two baseball games over the weekend. You can't find if you're a Apple TV. I mean, there's things that are wrong with it. But boy, from your perspective of traveling around on a day-to-day basis and the people playing the games and managing the games, I would think on the inside, it's got to be a real joy that they really are fixing the game for everybody.
I think a lot of the changes have been great. I will say first is that, you know, from an interest level standpoint, we've always seen great radio and television ratings here. And today, this year, and I think in part the 13-0 start has helped, attendance has been up 20-25%. And I think
good.
The team being, you know, 30 plus wins at home and the best, you know, home team in baseball has really helped a lot. But also it's a really exciting team. And you know, they've been at the top of the game in stolen bases and near the top in home runs. So they've been an exciting group. But, you know, to speak to your larger point about the game, you know, I think the pace of play is very similar to the game in the 80s and 90s that a lot of baseball fans fell in love with. And they basically, you know, they had ways to try and get back to it. And this was the best way to do it. And I think it's worked out great. I mean, the tempo of the game is very, very different as a broadcaster. And I think it probably has helped pitchers, you know, in terms of the game more than anything, even though we see the stolen bases and the home runs up from last year, because now they are forced to get into a tempo.
Hyper focus for pitchers, and I think really good pitchers have benefited from this. Guys that work at pace, like Maddison, Smoltz, and Glavin, would have no problem in this
None.
Era. Jim Palmer would have no problem. Good pitchers would have no problem playing under these circumstances.
And I would say guys who had had problems at times, maybe this is helping them. Like, for instance, Blake Snell was a tremendous pitcher with the Rays before they traded him after the 20 World Series. And he struggled with the Padres for a bit in his new environment. And he's really started to pick it up. He was terrific over the weekend against the Rays in San Diego. And I think part of that is because there's less time to think about which pitch am I going to throw if I'm a four-pitch mix guy with great stuff. How am I going to use this? Now you don't have time to think. You have 15 seconds with nobody on base. You have 20 seconds with a guy on base. You got to get it and go. And you got to trust your catcher, and you got to trust that the decision is made and throw your pitches with conviction. And I think it's almost forced some guys to get back on track in a good way. And I think that tempo is also great for the game overall.
Well, it's been fun to watch and fun to hopefully have some good little scraps here in the division. There aren't as many of them, but it really does sort of bake in the significance of a two-game set in Tampa in June having significance and meaning.
It definitely magnifies every single game you play against one another. And I think, let's say that the team that's trailing in the division may treat those games a whole lot differently because every game is then a two-game swing. You know, if let's say you split a two-game series for the team ahead, it's not that as big a deal. The team behind, if you split, it's almost two games washed off the schedule because it's the difference between gaining two games and being in neutral. And how many of those chances are you going to get? So I think it changes the way teams are going to manage these games. And I think it's going to change the intensity too.
You fear the Orioles yet? Or you know, I mean, you think they're real, but like they're not real till they start winning series in October, right? Like at any pace, and especially the pace with which you guys have played, just if they just catch the Rays by the end of the year, somehow win the division, it would be not miraculous, but it would really be an accomplishment, a heady accomplishment around here where they haven't done anything. But there is a point where I start to think, all right, when do they earn their respect? When they walk into Yankee Stadium or Fenway Park, when do you start fearing them? And I think it may be when an arm or two comes, whatever that is, outside the organization, Rodriguez, Means, DL Hall, whatever's going to happen. I don't think you fear their rotation.
If you're trailing them after six innings, I mean, they shorten the game, you know, whether it's Cano and Bautista and Coulomb and Baker and Ballman. I mean, they've got some really high-end arms. And I think, you know, they remind me a little bit of the Kansas City Royals from 14 and 15 in the fact that, you know, when you look at the back end of their bullpen, you know, with Davis and Holland, you know, they had three or four guys at the back end where if you fell behind after six innings or you were tied after six or even up just a run, you didn't want to fall behind that group because you knew that, you know, they were dangerous. And I also think the thing that makes them really tough is their lineup, just like the Rays, is very unrelenting. They're willing to accept their walks. They battle from behind. You're going to go through ups and downs during the course of the season. But, you know, I think 2 years ago, the Rays won 100 games, won the division, and then got knocked out in the first round of the playoffs. The postseason can be very random. But I think if you have a really good bullpen, the bullpens to me are bigger in the postseason than anything else. If your starters can kind of steady the ship and give you a chance to win and you have a nasty bullpen, you've got a chance in any playoff series. So I'm kind of curious how well they keep arms fresh in August, September, October. You know, do they have to really overwork those guys? I think the Rays have done a good job of making sure not to overwork guys. But a lot of it is going to come down to health. To me, they're a really dangerous team. Of all the teams I've seen, and we haven't seen every team in Major League Baseball, but I think that the bullpens that I thought were most impressive as a group were Baltimore and Houston. And so as I look forward, if I don't know what they will look like in September or October, but if you're asking me who I saw that had the most impressive bullpen out, you know, on other teams, those are probably the two teams that were dangerous.
Well, certainly a good charge to have in June to have a decent bullpen when you know you're going to need it because you're not getting starters going 6-7. And, you know, we've talked a little bit about a cavalry around here. And one thing about having younger players is dealing that out to fortify your major league roster when you think you can win. And we think we can win right now. I hope that the weather's nice in Tampa in October when we get down there, Neil.
Well, the good thing is we're playing in a dome. So no matter what the weather is, we don't have any issues. They can't say that for every team in this division.
I wasn't saying about the game. I was just talking about for taking a trip in October, you know, because the Ravens are playing in London. I'm not going there. Hey, man, I appreciate the visit. As always, it is a lot of fun to talk about baseball when baseball is good and when people in the community are reengaged with what's happening. And no bigger series than this week. The Orioles traveling down to the Trop in Tampa to St. Pete to get it done. I got a lot of friends that live down in St. Pete. They're all trying to get me to come down there and start drinking. I'm telling you, they have like a Maryland bar down there with a crab cake and all this stuff. So I'm all ready to come down there and see some meaningful baseball games and pet the Ray. I'll have you know that, Neil.
There you go. Looking forward to it.
I'm not a hater of the Trop. You know that. I'm okay with indoor baseball in St. Petersburg. So, but good luck with getting the new project built there as well. Hey, we don't have a lease here. I've been talking about it all week. We're playing on a week-to-week basis here with Camden Yards. So everybody's trying to jockey for position. At least we got good baseball in the field. Enjoy the games. Enjoy the call. Thanks for taking some time.
You got it. Thanks for having me on.
Neil Solon's coming back from San Diego to a beautiful Tampa, St. Pete, and awaiting the Baltimore Orioles' arrival for a short two-game series. Birds back at home all weekend against the Mariners. Luke Jones will be at Oriole Park at Camden Yards all weekend long. And, of course, the Ravens on respite for the next 6 weeks, which gives me a chance to go eat some crab cakes. I'll be at Spirits West on Thursday wearing my State Fair shirt because I drove through Catonsville the other night. I went to the Beaumont for a steak. It was delicious. And people already have their folding chairs out for the 4th of July parade in Catonsville. Crazy people in 21228, but I'm wearing my State Fair shirt anyway. We're going to be back at the Beaumont next month doing the Crab Cake Tour. We're kicking off our 25th anniversary on August 3rd at Costas, and then on August 4th at Drug City. Full day broadcast. Looking forward to it. Giving away a lot of Maryland Lottery scratch-offs in this 50th anniversary. I am Nestor. We are WNST, AM 1570, Towson, Baltimore, and we never stop talking. Oriole Magic. Feel it happen.